Welcome to another...
Welcome to Pottercast, the official podcast of the Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
You hear that, Ern? The Leaky Cauldron.
And now, Leaky's own, Melissa and Ellie.
Hi guys, welcome to Pottercast number 15. We're very happy to be back in a normal swing of things around here after a month of Goblet of Fire premieres, special reports, live podcasts. We haven't been doing our normal format, but this is a good old segmented Pottercast like you're used to. So first of all, the thing that's not normal about this show is that there is no fan interview and no mailbag segment. Instead, you all have been sending us your Goblet of Fire reviews in voicemail, and we have brought those together and chopped them up, and they are sprinkled throughout the entire show, so enjoy those. Thank you for all the insightful, wonderful comments that you've been leaving for us. It's really great. We have a great modcast for you, and also Sue and John are back, and at the very end, make sure you listen, because we have a special announcement about a Christmassy thing. I'll give you a hint. Guru of Sloth, you might want to pay attention, and now if you're a regular podcast listener, you know exactly what I mean. We also continue our interview with Mike Newell, the director of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. Well, that's it. We're going to go right over to Sue for your news.
Sue's not here this week.
Who's this?
Excuse me?
Who are you?
Where's
Sue?
Sue is indisposed at the moment.
I know this voice. Is this Micah?
You bet it is.
Mugglecast Micah?
Yep.
Why are you here? How did you get in here? Where's Sue?
I don't think that really matters, does it?
I think you should tell me where Sue is.
I think we should get to this week's news.
No, Micah, no. I'm concerned now. You Mugglecast boys have been acting up lately, and I need to know where she is.
No, I'm sorry. It's time for the news. As of last Monday, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire had grossed a stunning $181.4 million in the 21 countries where it has already been released. Warner Brothers has also announced that it became the biggest ever opening weekend for a film in Britain. The fourth Harry Potter movie has proven extremely successful in IMAX theaters. The IMAX experience opened to sellout crowds and shattered every record for an IMAX Hollywood simultaneous release, beating the previous record by more than 30%, with earning an estimated $2.9 million over the three-day period. Sources are predicting that Goblet of Fire will surpass Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, which made $614 million outside of North America. The fourth film grossed more than $85 million in 19 countries outside of North America in its first weekend. International Space Station Commander William MacArthur received a special viewing of the fourth movie while in space. NASA and Warner Brothers teamed up for the effort to recognize the astronaut that is living on board the space station. And it's only been a week since its release, but Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire is already widely available across file-sharing networks. According to the UK newspaper This Is London, Warner Brothers had the following to say about movie piracy. Every blockbuster will be pirated. That's where the money is. It's very easy to find pirated product, even though we are fighting it as hard as we can. The movie industry estimates that piracy results in losses between $2.3 billion and $3.5 billion each year. In other news, the New York Times has included Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince in their list of 100 notable books for 2005. And finally, the Internet Movie Database has June 1st, 2007 listed as their release date for the Order of the Phoenix movie, but we think this date announcement is a little premature. We'll keep you guys posted. That's all the news. Back to
Mike.
You guys.
Get out. Go back to Mugglecast. Oh, and turn off that stupid music. We gotta get better security in here. This is ridiculous. Alright, on with the show. Now.
This was the Harry Potter that I was waiting for.
The entire movie was definitely awesome.
This was by far the best movie that they've done.
I thought it was absolutely awesome. It was brilliant.
I thought Goblet of Fire was better than all the previous movies combined.
I love Goblet of Fire. I think it's the best one yet, and the next movies are going to have to try really hard to compete with this one.
It's the best one yet. That's it. Bottom line, best one yet.
It's spectacular, absolutely phenomenal. The acting is just out of this world, and even though I've read the book, over and over again, it just leaves you on the edge of your seat and leaving you in complete suspense.
It was the scariest, but it was also the funniest, which made for a good balance.
It was absolutely amazing. I really liked it.
You always taken the fun, magical feel of the first two movies and mixed it with the darker side from the third one. It created the perfect Potter blend that is sure to appeal to everyone, or at least most of us fans.
And I think that the Goblet of Fire movie is absolutely amazing.
Woo, Goblet of Fire.
And now, how many days till the Order of Phoenix?
Okay, we're back. We found Sue. She is safe and sound. So, hi, Sue.
And we are back with Melissa Anelli.
Hello.
Our fearless leader, hello.
Fearless and driver.
Yes, that's right. She is Mario Andretti of the Leaky Cauldron. And who's that over in the corner? It's Mr. Chipotle himself.
John, ever since you started talking about Chipotles, I've been in the city a couple times since, and I can't stop seeing them. I see Chipotle.
They
jump out of me now. I took a picture of one for you, actually. So this is our first real Pottercast since our live dealy.
Yeah.
I know, people are getting annoyed with us releasing all these little mini craps. Sorry, guys, they're just a lot easier to edit than this thing. Cut me some slack.
We've all just had so much to do. So much to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, we just got past one holiday, too. We had our Thanksgiving here in the United States. Mm-hmm. And a lot of...
Yay for Thanksgiving.
Yay for turkey. I like turkey on Thanksgiving. I love that song.
What song?
Adam Sandler's turkey song.
Oh, the turkey.
Turkey
guy.
For you, turkey for me.
Turkey.
Okay. Anyway, what's the news, Suze? Suze news, news.
Oh, there's a lot. Boy, we saw that video. Yeah, you guys did a good job on our red carpet video from the Goblet premiere.
Yay.
If you'll notice, it's a little shaky in space, in places.
Yeah.
We had a tripod. We had a perfect.
We shot some killer video, and then I got mugged outside the Barnes
yeah,
and Noble
by the invisible
like,
tape
I'm
mugger.
Like, yeah, I'm like, here's my wallet. He's like, I don't need your wallet. I need your mini DV tape of the premiere. I'm like, oh, geez, really? This is gonna kill me.
Yeah.
But he took it, and
yeah,
that was
that's
it.
Exactly what
I'm
happened.
Sorry. I got
yeah.
mugged.
He got leaky mugged.
But it was good video, good stuff.
It was.
Yeah. We were tempting fate with
yeah.
that name.
You're right. Hey, a leaky mugger would be very good. He'd run away and all the stuff would fall out and you'd be fine. So anyway, yeah.
So Jamie was great.
Oh, he rapped. I love him.
Jamie.
I'm so glad he didn't fall for Emerson's give us dirt about Medusa stuff. So glad.
Yeah, well, no, because Jamie's loyalties are not with the nerds at the MuggleNet.
Got some scoops, though, on Phoenix. We didn't just talk Goblet, right?
We talked to David Heyman, and he let us know that Gilderoy Lockhart is scripted for Order of the Phoenix.
Oh,
which goes with what we heard from Matt Lewis a while back about how they are going to do all the Neville stuff. So it makes sense if they're in the hospital that it would be a nice, funny moment to see Gilderoy Lockhart and his, you know, joined-up writing comment. And that's excellent.
Yeah.
No Rita.
Just him yeah. waving, you know. Oh, I know. I can't believe that.
I think I believe it. I think it's okay. I think they can just say she wrote the article.
But you know what? I'm still waiting to find out if Miss Thompson's going to be back as Trelawney.
You know, we
forgot
to
that yet?
Ask. We'll figure.
Wait, she wasn't in the fourth one, was she?
No.
No.
Oh.
But I mean, I want that scene with her and Umbridge. You know.
Oh,
I mean,
well,
she's got to be in it.
I love that scene.
You know.
Yeah.
Very exciting. You got some other good ones. Dan is looking forward to it.
He's looking forward to
Reckless.
Well, actually, we asked him about book six. I asked him about book six. I said, what are you looking forward to most? He said the cave. He was reading the cave and was just like, I you know, oh my goodness. And the Ginny scenes, which I'm sure made Bonnie Wright feel very happy.
Oh, Bonnie. Yeah. Get ready, girl.
But he's going to do some snogging before
Katie
that,
Ling.
Though, with Miss Katie Ling,
Katie
right?
Katie Ling. She yeah. is also, she said that she's most looking forward to book five, The Kiss. I mean, it's pretty much all she does in book five.
Well,
she's in Dumbledore's army.
And cry. She cries a lot.
She said that she realized that Cho becomes annoying in book five.
Yeah.
The Cho's pipe. We also talked to Mike Newell.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
About the DVD. He says we're going to get about 15 minutes of deleted scenes, and he talked about why he didn't include Spew, which, was a fair point. John, you remember what he said, right?
He said with the deleted scenes, they talked about how they didn't really tape any more Quidditch than what you mm-hmm. saw, which kind of stinks. But what else did he say?
Oh, he said that the deal with the elves is that every time you put an elf on, it's like $100,000.
Yes.
And if the information is can be done another way, traditionally, you know, Matt Lewis or Neville hands him the gillyweed.
Yes.
Then, you know.
Yeah, so basically the philosophy is those effects are expensive, so only use them if it's really necessary. Like, if you want to have Harry knock into something in Dumbledore's office to find the pensive, you should probably create and animate crazy jumping black candy to fly around the room and
yeah,
by Andrew's hands, because it's the most necessary
yeah.
thing.
That smacks
right.
to me.
They probably yeah. asked Joe, they're like, hey, Joe Rowling, question. We're trying to get Harry to find the pensive. How should we do this? Oh, well, what if you had him reach into these little candies and have him start biting his hand, and then he can trip over something, and then he can find it. Oh, Joe, you're brilliant. I couldn't have thought of any better myself.
But that whole scene smacks to me of something that somebody just had this idea and thought it would be so great, and nobody said, you know, there's an easier way to do this.
What do they call that candy?
Licorice snaps.
Yeah.
Snaps.
Does licorice snaps, are they supposed to bite your hand?
They probably would in the Wizarding World, but we've never seen them in the book.
Well, no, because we know chocolate frogs jump around, and they only got one good jump in them. But do we know anything about biting candy?
I do believe, based on other candy, that there is candy that would bite. I think that's not a stretch.
Well, I can't rip on that too much, because that could be my job one day, is to sit there in a studio with yeah. the dim lights on a computer making candy bite an actor's hand. And,
no, you'd be the candy wrangler, is that it?
Yeah, well, no, if I'd be sitting here making some animation of, you know, a licorice snap, and then I put on my iPod and hear a bunch of brat kids ripping on my work, I wouldn't be
and
happy
we were,
about that.
If we were so those
sorry,
brat kids, yeah.
Sorry
just have
to the guy
it.
Who was sitting there animating those licorice snaps.
No, I'm not disputing the work, the animators, the companies that worked on it are fantastic.
Yeah.
I just thought that
yeah.
the whole idea of it, you know, just the way that they presented it into the pensive was
yeah, some of their choices in this movie, as we discussed in detail, were interesting. So let's just move on. You can hear more about this in the
if you want to hear us about the movie for a half hour.
Yeah.
Download the previous episode.
14. But yeah. Anyway, so yeah, Katie Lung, did I just say hi, I'm Andrew Sims. Katie Ling talked that she's excited to kiss Dan in movie 5, but what we're forgetting is that that will not be Dan's first on-screen kiss. He has just started to film a movie called December Boys in Australia, where he plays I think he plays an orphan again, am I right?
Yes, he does.
Typecast.
Well, of all the things to typecast him as,
typecast
him as an orphan. You'd think he would be typecasted as a wizard.
Not as a hero yeah. or a wizard.
As an orphan.
As an orphan.
Yeah. So that's exciting. I'm excited to see him do something else.
Me too. And then he's going to do a little bit in Extras comedy show too. So he's going to be a busy young man, you know.
It's nice to see him continuing to work, not sitting on his laurels, just saying, well, if I want this career, Harry Potter, it's been wonderful, but it's a stepping stone, you know? I just hope it doesn't steal him from it.
It's a stepping stone as soon
yes,
as
exactly.
we're done, Dan. You got a few
more movies,
to go.
Dude.
Let's not get antsy.
You got a long career.
You got plenty of work outside of Potter, I promise. Yeah. You're not going to be Mark Hamill.
You're going to be done at like 20, and you're going to have a long, wonderful career. I've been in seven films, and most people can't get into films until their mid-20s. If they get into films at all.
Yeah. And you know what will happen?
That's awesome.
If you do all seven films, all your fans from the Potter movies will follow you to whatever you do. If you jump out early and we're stuck with some other Harry, nobody will follow what you do after that. That's a pretty closely accurate warning. But we love you, Dan, and we got a hug and an autograph and a picture, so you're
oh, those
on
pictures,
the
they're
going to
go up. They're going to go up, I promise. I've just been so crazy. We are going to have pictures from the after party
oh,
at
good.
The Goblet of Fire premiere, which were taken by my mom. And so because my mom was so wonderful and was so helpful, she deserves a plug. So my mother has an online shop called thefavoriteplace.com, and you should go to it if you are – here's my ad for my mother. If you are planning any major event, she has – favors and all this stuff. So there, don't complain. She's the woman who got you pictures from the after party and interviews. So go to thefavoriteplace.com. Tell her that Melissa sent you, and you'll get treated right. She'll give you pasta.
Yes.
Oh,
does. You guys came over and had pasta, right?
Yes, we'll have a big thing in the back. We had big seating.
That's right, we did.
Probably the best ever.
Yummy.
So what else is going on? Oh, we have a great fundraiser. Speaking of Dan Radcliffe.
Oh, the Candle for Care. No, Mr. Radcliffe does a Candle for Care for in lieu of, you know, he gets so many presents. He's asking this year that you do not give him gifts, but donate instead to one of his charities that he supports, the Malza House, which is a children's hospice in the UK, excuse me.
Oh, he's a class act, that mm-hmm. kid. That's very cool.
You can find the links to that on danradcliffe.com and danradcliffe.
Yeah, go ahead and give an email to Jenna, and she'll tell you how it works over there.
Yep, Jenna's got a whole page made up for you on how to do it and more information about the hospice and everything, so it's really a good thing. So.
Me too.
I admire him for doing that. I think that's a class move.
My gosh. He's probably more aware than anybody that he doesn't need people to buy him things. So yeah, Dan is making a lot of money these days. He went from £400,000 dollars in his first movie, and now he's commanding $20 million for Order of the Phoenix, and I think he deserves every penny.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, totally.
Awesome.
I think his last big scene when they bring Cedric back from that graveyard, that scene alone earns him the $20 million.
Nice big holiday bonus check from Warner Brothers.
All I gotta
for that
say.
Scene.
Well, there's a reason that, and you know, a lot of people are paying to go see that movie, aren't they?
They are. How many, Sue?
Lots and lots.
We've now
people.
Hit the what mark?
Oh, we're worldwide over 400 million now, boys and girls.
Yay!
Wow. That is incredible. Think about that. I mean, that's a lot of moolah.
That's a lot of moolah.
Yeah.
But it's a great film, and people are
going
well,
what
to
happens,
see it.
Well, what's happened
it,
that's but... not happened in the last... I mean, it has happened, but this is more so than any of the other movies. They're showing a real vigor for the film, repeat business. People want to bring their friends. They want to go see little things over again. And that's what happens when you pay the kind of care to it that they did in this film. Not that they didn't in the others, but this one just seemed to shoot right over.
Yeah, and and we'll tell you right now, me and my good friend Heather, a new Leaky staff member, you want something to go back to see the film for, go back just for the scene in the graveyard. Well, two things. The Voldemort Crucio and Crucio off.
That's right.
He turns the spell off when he's done now, apparently. Crucio off! And then, right around that
we
time...
We get 10 emails about why it's
Crucio. I swear to God, that's
like
in there. Yeah.
But it could be Crucio off. I don't know what it is, but he turns the spell off, like clap on, clap off.
Yeah, it's like a switch. That go to see that, and then go to see when Voldemort makes Harry bow.
Yeah.
Which may or may not be an Imperius curse because they don't know how to do an Imperius curse in that movie. When he makes him bow, look to the right, and you'll see one of the Death Eaters clapping like, "Yay!" He's just all excited about it. It's the funniest thing, and it just totally is so out of the moment that. It's worth a laugh, and then people in the theater will look at you funny for laughing at that part, but they'll probably have missed the clapping. So go back to the clapping.
John, that was an excellent summation.
That was a public service announcement.
On that note, let's do one more public service announcement and bow out gracefully.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, guys.
I thought it was probably one of the best Harry Potters thus far, but... I think that they try to vamp up the stories with a lot of special effects.
Voldemort was perfect looking. He looked brilliant, but as a character, he was much too passionate and emotional. He wasn't this cold, kind of stoic, frightening guy. I didn't really like exploring this movie that much. I mean, I thought the effects were good and everything, and I thought it was really creative, but I didn't really like it that much. And it also seemed to be rushed, and that was really disappointing.
I actually, my mom had never seen a Harry Potter movie before, and she's not read the book either, and she was 100% confused as to what happened. She heard a little bit about Lord Voldemort, but she was wondering why is he being, so what if he can touch Harry Potter and all that stuff.
I was disappointed in the movie. They left out way too much, and it was just way too fast, and they jumped from one thing to the other, and felt like there was no storyline. I like the book a lot better, and I think Azkaban is a better movie.
The movie was very disappointing. They should have stayed much closer to the book than they did. I thought they took too many liberties with the straying from the plot. They should have made the movie longer.
I think there were a lot of little subtle things that in the movie that maybe would have been lost on someone who didn't read the books.
It was just the editing that I really did not like. They had all the scenes too close together for the tasks, and they didn't explain enough for those who had not read the book.
And my biggest problem with the film was the end.
when the trio they just seemed back to normalcy way too fast. Harry and the rest, they didn't seem like they had just endured an intense emotional trauma.
We'll probably go see it again, and I think we'll enjoy it better the second time around.
And now, straight from the Leaky Lounge, this week's Modcast.
Oh dear, we are in trouble.
Hello and welcome to another Modcast. This is Kim Parker, Kim M. Parker. Tonight we have a new mod who will be joining us. We also will be discussing theories from our forums that we haven't really discussed yet here.
This is Sunny Elf or Naomi Boyer.
This is MTWE Lovett or Mary.
Hi, and this is Doris Herman or Darcy. Tonight we're going to be talking about Harry's hero's journey, and we're going to be comparing Harry's journey to a classical hero's journey, as well as journeys that other modern day or classical heroes have been on in literature. Before we start, though, I want to quickly comment about hero's journey and tell you a little bit about what a hero's journey is. The hero's journey is just the journey that the hero goes through in the story, and when the hero is going through this, the hero goes through certain steps. The first step is separation. After the hero has been separated, the hero has to be initiated. After initiation, there comes a time period where the hero is going to go through what's considered a crucifixion. Then they return back to power. And then finally, there's the end of the story. And that's basically Campbell's hero's journey in a nutshell. And it tells you a little bit about what you can expect in this particular chat. All right, in the hero's journey, the beginning of the hero's journey starts with the separation. And to me, that is so obvious. What happened to Harry? Harry was separated from his family. Harry was separated from his lifestyle of being a wizard, and he was brought to live with the Dursleys. Another really interesting theory, and I want to hear y'all's opinion on this, is usually the hero starts out as the son of nobility or the son of a king. What do you guys think about that?
Well, we know from the very beginning that Harry, at least if not the son of true nobility, is the son of those, you know, nouveau riche maybe would be another way of looking at it, because we know from the very beginning of seeing his vault at Gringotts that it's packed with gold. It's packed with gold and with, you know, galleons, etc., that tell that they're the Potters must have had some sort of a role in the general wizarding society.
And plus where they lived.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know what I mean? How yeah. They lived in Godric's Hollow. And that, how didn't Rowling say that her editor didn't even pick up the connection that it was Godric's Hollow and Godric Gryffindor?
Well, I believe what her editor didn't pick up was the fact that Bowman Wright, who invented the Snitch, was from Godric's Hollow. Theory being that may be one place that the money comes from.
Well, I've always thought that the fact that Harry may have come from nobility is interesting, because it does sort of pull in that whole, you know, is he the heir to Gryffindor? Is he, when Dumbledore says only a true
right.
Gryffindor, that wording
yeah,
seems
right.
sort of unusual and different. So, yeah, you know, I've always kind of wondered exactly what
yeah, I don't
you know.
I didn't buy into that until after this last book, though. I think because we've started seeing more of the Hufflepuff and the other people being brought in through the Horcruxes and things.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I understand what you mean.
We're starting to see it when it first started out that we had, you know, Chamber of Secrets. We just had Slytherin's heir, and at that point, it was a little kind of it'd be kind of silly to say, oh, look, we have the Slytherin's heir automatically is going to be defeated by Gryffindor's heir. It's just too black and white, too cut and dry. But you're right, with Half-Blood Prince starting to see the fact that we meet Hezbollah Smith, who's obviously Hufflepuff's heir, that there are heirs to the founders roaming around the wizarding world, and it made it more likely that Harry was somehow related to Gryffindor.
Now, as we move down our hero's journey, after separation, we get the call to adventure. And the call to adventure is that time period when, in the books, I think, is when Harry is maybe feeling out or understanding that he's a wizard. And then he gets to the point where Hagrid even tells him he's a wizard. What do you guys
think
about
that? Harry. I love the fact that he first goes, no, I'm not.
Yeah, I thought at first the call to adventure was just the owl post, you know, saying, you know, it was kind of the, look, you're about to get a call to adventure. And then when Hagrid bangs down the door, I think that just is a Hagrid-sized call to adventure. You know what I mean?
Now, what about crossing the first threshold? Campbell talks about that being a big step for our hero. What do you think Harry's first threshold was?
Well, I personally think that's the whole first year at Hogwarts. You know, some people might say it's at, you know, when he crosses into the Leaky Cauldron. That's like a physical barrier between the Muggle world and the wizard world, you know. But I think that the whole threshold that brings him fully into the wizarding world is him completing his whole first year at Hogwarts.
I almost think crossing that threshold is really that first meeting with Voldemort. It's that first that's where he makes the decision that he is not going to take the track that Tom Riddle took, whether he knows it or not. I mean, he's told there's not, Laurie's favorite quote, there's not good or evil, there's only power and those too weak to seek it. And he makes that choice that he's not going to see the world that way. And to me, that's where he crosses the threshold into accepting that this is what he's going to be, whether he understands it at the time or not.
Now, the initiation is really interesting. In mythology, the initiation sometimes is an initial battle. But I'm not really sure with Harry Potter what the initiation is. Mary, what do you think the initiation is?
Well, I mean, certainly when Hagrid comes to get him, but also once he gets to school, the Sorting Hat kind of could be a initiation for him. He has to get through that to get into his house to become a part of this community.
You know, I see that as an initiation too. I almost see so much of the first book as an initiation, sort of him accepting his call to supernatural abilities. You know, his it really is. And then at the end of the book, when he doesn't want to go home, I think that's, you know, the telltale sign that he's there.
It's also why it's probably the, to me at least, the slowest moving of the six novels so far. It's because...
Right. It does have to build up a lot.
Yeah, so much exposition
just so people know what's going on.
Okay, as we continue to look at the hero's journey, there is a crucifixion kind of in the middle of this. And that's really interesting because most people think of crucifixion as a death. But we're in the middle of the hero's journey. So how could there be a crucifixion at this point in the series?
It's almost where... That idea, it's the point on which the series turns, the stories turn, the novels turn to being an active fight against Voldemort. You know, in the first three even parts of Goblet of Fire, he's acting in the background. Voldemort's acting in the background. The evil hasn't really come forward yet. We know it's there. It's causing Harry problems, but it's not really looking him in the eye yet. And then you have that moment at the end. Or Voldemort returns. When Voldemort returns,
Rafe.
And evil looks him in the eye. I mean, the evil is real. The evil is there. It looks him in the eyes. No longer can he deny it. Can he deny that that's there and that this is his call? He has to, and he decides. He accepts. I'm not going to die. I'm going to die like my parents. I'm not going to die cowering behind his gravestone.
Well, I was just going to say, I look at it as the death of Harry as just a passive bystander. He's just been in this world for 4 years. He's learning things, whatever, and things kind of happen to him. At this point, he starts going out and doing things. You know what I mean? So it's right. The whole center of the, you know, the center of the series. And so he's not just, well, I'll just wait until something happens to me. He goes out and...
Right.
He's, you know, especially in the fifth book, he starts to get really frustrated because things aren't happening fast enough, and he wants to be out there doing something. So,
which we'll certainly see in the next book, where he's searching actively for the Horcruxes.
Right. One thing about the crucifixion too is just the word crucifixion. There's a biblical reference there, and most people think of a crucifixion in regards to the Bible, and really, if you think about it, in the turning point of the series, there, in a way, is a spilling of blood. Harry gives his blood to allow someone else to be reborn. But there's more going on there, too, because Campbell calls it a crucifixion or a dismemberment. Somebody else is dismembered at that same point.
Oh, yeah, Wormtail.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting the way that Hero's Journey at that point sort of picks up two people. And, you know, when I first saw that, because, of course, thinking like an English teacher, I thought, oh, my gosh, there's the spilling of blood. I know that that's the symbolic crucifixion.
Nerd.
But somebody else was dismembered at the same time. Ooh, that could be important. This concludes our modcast on Harry and Harry's hero journey. Thank you very much for listening. If you would like to discuss this topic, please feel free to come into Leaky Lounge and discuss this topic or any others we have going on at this time. For Kim, Naomi, and Mary, this is Doris Herman. You guys have a wonderful evening.
I was much more emotional watching the movie than reading the book. I was crying because I felt for Hermione, I felt for Neville, and of course the end scene with Cedric's body. It was much more emotional for me than reading the book.
The only thing that really disappointed me in the whole movie, it was the portrayal of Dumbledore, because it's just not like him at all. He was very angry and violent, and that's not the character that I was born to love and see. And I'm so tired of seeing him in that horrible, horrible robe and that awful thing he puts in his video. It just drives me mad.
What can I say about Dan Radcliffe? He's matured so much into his character. You'll notice it especially once the death of Cedric. He pours so much emotion into that scene. I was literally crying.
I think that the visuals were just too dark and muddy for you to make anything out. I think the story continuity was heavily flawed, and I thought that the storytelling lacked any sense of urgency, so nobody really cared what happened to anyone.
But my favorite part was learning Myrtle in the bathtub with Harry, and she kept trying to sneak peek. Oh my gosh.
I really wanted to love this film, but I just couldn't. I thought the editing was very bad and there was no flow or continuity between the scenes. But what really bothered me the most was the ending. At the end of the book, you really have this helpless and scared feeling. And for this film that was touted to be so dark and so scary and so different from the others, I thought the ending scene was too light and too jokey to convey that feeling. I feel like if I hadn't read the book, I would be confused as to why Voldemort coming back in this movie was any different than the other one.
Voldemort, wow. That was just wow. I think we have a new iconic face of evil here.
It was a bit quick and a bit choppy, and I thought, if you haven't read the books then you might not understand it, but I took my 10-year-old brother and he understood it, so I'm really happy with the way it's turned out.
One thing I wanted to comment about was that we are so tied to the books as fans that we nitpick and we're so critical of the movies because we love every little thing that J.K. Rowling made in the story and the world that she's created. So I think as fans that we kind of have to look at the whole picture, and when you do that, Goblet of Fire was an amazing film.
Time to put on our extendable ears. Listen in on Potter Talk from the people making the magic.
Welcome back to Extendable Ears. This portion of the podcast is sponsored by DarkerCommandos.com, which will soon be publishing a very long retrospective history of the Harry Potter news phenomenon. So give that a look. DarkerCommandos.com, the link will be in our show notes. Now, this interview is a continuation of the Mike Newell interview that we began a few weeks ago. In this clip, you'll hear him talk about his impressions of the wizarding world and how he relates it to medieval times. He also talks about working with the main trio of actors and whether he'd like to come back for the 7th movie. In this very beginning bit, you'll hear him answer the question of whether he read Book 6 before starting to shoot. Enjoy!
No. I didn't read it, and I haven't read it because it only came out 3 months ago, and I've been busy. And it's another, you know, it's another huge, whacking novel, and simply I've been busy. I obviously read the 5th one because that has relevance. No, I didn't do that, nor did I change my view of things for any of the stories that might be coming up. There's been I've been very strongly encouraged by the producers and by Warner Brothers to think of this as a specific one-off film. Perhaps it's, you know, it's a link in a chain. There are going to be seven of these. Each is a school year. And therefore, you know, you can't be irresponsible. But that was simply never, it was never even discussed. It was simply assumed that this was a one-off film. I always thought that this is how I thought about The Wizard World. I thought that they were like, sort of medieval knights who, would defend the borders of the country, that is us, who are innocent of it all, but they are out there knowing that there is evil, knowing that there is all sorts of weird and threatening stuff out there, and unknown to us, they keep us safe. They are the heroes in that way. They're, as I say, they're like the Teutonic Knights who kept the ravening Slavic hordes away from Europe. You've got to get it. It has to be real. And people ask me, what was it like dealing with such a fantastical story? And it wasn't a fantastical story to me at all. It was a real thing. It was absolutely real. Okay, it's got wands and stuff like that. But you could say that this was what it was like living in Europe in the 30s. There was something really bad out there, and people were either going to do something about it or they weren't going to do something about it, and that really bad stuff was creeping ever absolutely remorselessly forward. It was getting worse. And so there are all sorts of things that you can do, really quite recent manifestations of this, that you can point to, and you can make a very real world out of it. And what that means is that you've got to have the actor to do it. And Rafe was the actor to do it, because Rafe doesn't chew the scenery, and he isn't sort of 19th century melodrama figure. He's absolutely real, and cold and chilling and absolutely dedicated to doing bad, and as soon as you have that, you can do it. A good story is an interesting character in a bad fix, and that's absolutely what this is. I don't know about American schools. It may be that there is kind of a general similarity in all schools. I don't know, but an English school is a very it's a very eccentric, anarchic kind of place, because what it is it's if you don't think of children as children, but think of them as adults in training, which is what I felt about this story, then what they're doing is they're learning how to live in society for the very first time. That's what school is. You know, it's got rules, and it's got lots of other people that you have to take notice of, and it has structures, and it has high days and holidays. It's society. That's what it is. It's society in miniature. And, of course, then what you do is you throw against that hundreds of bright, optimistic, naughty, vigorous anarchists, and what happens is that the sparks fly off it, and it's very, very entertaining. And when you think back on your school days, I suppose some people must think back in with great misery, but I don't. I don't think most people do. I think they think back with enjoyment, and what they remember is how nutty it was. School is nutty because you have this collision of natural anarchists, the children, against rules for the first time. And so I felt that was something that was particular about an English school, and I remembered it very well, and it made me laugh a lot, and I like doing things that make me laugh. And so it was very fruitful. Children who are stars like these children are can, of course, and we've all heard the stories, and some of us have even seen it, they can be hellish. But these kids are absolutely solidly founded. They do not get above themselves. They don't throw tantrums. They do come in with their lines learned. They do come on time and with all sorts of energy and enthusiasm. And not once did I feel the weight of the other films behind me. Not once did I feel, oh, God, are we doing this again? It wasn't like that at all. Their appetites were absolutely high for this one. By the time I finish this, it will be well over 2 years, between 2 and 2.5 years that I've been working on this, and that's enough. I want to have some different subjects would be nice. But of course, the last one will be a tremendous challenge, and I'm sure that the queue to direct the last one will be very long, and I hope I'm in it.
So, hi guys, we're back. The end of Pottercast 15.
Not the end.
We still have a little ways to go, just a little. Actually, it's now the first of our holiday episodes, which are going to be all over the place, because on top of everything all of us have to do, we also now have the holidays to contend with, so shows might be a little bit different from time to time.
Yes, but you will love it anyway, and you will tell all of your friends to download, and it will be
keep saying that
good.
Over and over in a soothing voice.
You will keep downloading.
I am such in a holiday mood.
Are you, Sue?
I'm ready.
How was your Thanksgiving?
I am. Oh, it was good. My Thanksgiving was good. I had, you know, lots of stuffing, but now I was listening to my Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
Oh, I hate Rudolph.
Oh, no. And it reminded me of my other favorite
Rudolph,
animal.
He's such a glory hog. Yes, the hippogriff.
Yes. And now I want to sing.
God rest ye merry hippogriffs, not face near this day. Remember with the time turner, soon we'll fly away. To take our beloved Sirius to places far away. Oh, tidings of chicken bones and rats, chicken bones and rats. Oh, tidings of chicken bones and rats.
And this is what I was singing today.
Oh, Sue.
There you go.
Yay, Sue.
Sue gave us the first Christmas
Filk.
Christmas filk.
Yes, I'm in such a mood for it.
Okay,
let's do it.
Okay, let's have
Come
some
on.
More
I know
those.
That was terrible.
Our filk cast was so
yes.
much fun. Guru of Sloth, we know you've got a million up your sleeve. So it is going to be the Christmas Carol filk cast. You have 2 weeks to send us
yes.
filks. Now, if you need reminding, a filk is a song that words have been changed. So basically, make it Harry Potter themed. Make it Pottercast themed. Pick a Christmas song you like and change it. Sing it on our voicemail. And which you can get all that info at pottercast.com, and we will put together a show for releasing near or at Christmas, so you can have your carols.
And I only have one rule: if you are going to take on the beast of the Christmas song that is the Partridge in the Pear Tree,
oh no,
20-minute song, you better dang well be creative about it, or don't even hope to have that aired, because that's a 12-minute song, and it can get annoying if the words are poop.
no poop. No poop in the Christmas
yes.
songs.
You know what? We've
no.
only got so much room in the Gmail. Please, no poop. Not that any of you have sent poop already.
Send poop to John
don't
Noe.
Even. Don't start that. I do not want to go to the P.O. box.
Okay. Yes, yes, yes.
No.
Oh, if somebody sends Melissa poop in the P.O. box, oh, I would PayPal them lots.
Oh, no.
Anyway, to send us a Christmas carol, filk.
Guys.
I love rants on poop.
Thank you, John. Yeah, the number is 1-425-296-2445, and that is 1-425 by magic with a K. In the UK, it's 207-193-2872. You can send it.
Don't forget the
plus and the zero and all that stupid things that you guys in the UK have to do.
But you don't really need the plus,
we don't know
we're
what
told.
The plus thing is. In our email, our email address is staff@pottercast.com, and that's that.
Yep.
And I'm taking down the P.O. Box information right now for a week.
There'll be a moratorium on the P.O. box.
No.
I'm going to set up my own P.O. box down in Florida. Not that I enjoy poop or anything, but everything that's come in so far has been nice and edible.
You know what? It'd be nice, though, if they actually could, like, send you, like, burritos. Cause since you didn't, I feel bad you didn't get any.
I thought people sort of, you know, thought I was, you know, nice to listen to sometimes and may have decided that they liked me enough to send me a burrito, but...
Oh, my God.
You know, maybe I was just...
Well, I'll tell you, when I write to Santa, I will say, Dear Santa,
I've been a good boy this year. I have. For real.
All right.
There you go.
Well, there's really nothing else to say. Goodbye, guys.
Bye. Have a good week. We love you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening.
Bye. We've missed it.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you two don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great Scott, no wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.